We know that you want to build your family on the right foundation from the very start, the foundation of Jesus Christ. Concordia Publishing House offers more than 8,000 products for churches, schools, and homes, dedicated customer service, and an experienced staff to help you focus on what matters most. Click to connect at cph.org. Concordia Publishing House, listening, responding, providing for God's people. Concordia Publishing House, cph.org.
This is the kind of thing might surprise you that people would get in such an uproar over this confirmation. There are all sorts of confirmations that need to take place in the first months of any president's taking of office, any president's term. He has to fill positions, and a lot of those positions are glamorous and interesting, and some of them, it would seem, are not so glamorous and not so interesting. Why is it there's such an uproar over Betsy DeVos and the Department of Education? And is that concern about controlling the Department of Education, is that something exclusive to the Democratic Party, who is losing control of that department? Joining us to answer some of those questions, Joy Pullman, managing editor of The Federalist, author of a recent column titled "Democrats Are Going Ape on Betsy DeVos Because If They Lose Education, They Lose Everything," and a forthcoming book, "The Education Invasion." Joy, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Thank you.
What should we have learned watching the Betsy DeVos confirmation hearings?
Betsy DeVos is the first of Trump's nominees to really get the kind of political theater that I guess we've come to expect from leftists. But even though, for example, Secretary of State now confirmed Rex Tillerson had a lot of connections that you would expect Democrats to oppose, they didn't really kind of activate their inner protester until Betsy's confirmation. So they were able to get two Republican senators to defect and vote against her. And they also spent all night Tuesday night, and they knew it was theater. You know, they're basically spending all night just kind of running out the clock on her nomination because everyone was counting and knew that they didn't have enough votes to sink her nomination. But the vote was also delayed, you know, just because of all these backroom dealings. And I think the real reason for that is that Democrats gain a large amount of their political power from both the money and the ideological ability to raise the nation's children because of their control over the public education system from preschool all the way through college.
Are Democrats alone in that particular issue?
I actually don't think so. There have been, so I wrote about in this piece that you're mentioning, something I've been thinking about for a really long time, and we have seen really break out into our politics in general over the President Trump election cycle. And that is that the country is no longer breaking down specifically by political party necessarily, but kind of between divisions, bipartisan divisions of ruling class and governed class. A number of prominent social scientists, such as Angela Codevilla at the Claremont Institute and Charles Murray at the American Enterprise Institute, have been talking about this in various ways in society. And so in education, I've really seen that come to the fore. Both Republicans and Democrats generally agree on the way that education should be run. They have a united governing philosophy rather than, you know, Republicans think one thing, Democrats think another. So basically, both of them agree that kind of the goal of public education is to create a planned economy and that it's okay to have federal micromanagement of public schools.
Is that what you mean when you say the ruling class is just quibbling over the details of who does it better?
Exactly. So, you know, people, again, folks talking about this sometimes call this the managerial progressivism or the administrative state. But basically the idea is that for at least the past 50, 60 years, if not the past century, since the progressive movement of the early 1900s, both political parties have basically agreed to ever-expanding and unlimited government rather than the American tradition of limited government in a large space for individual freedom, for private associations to solve our local problems. But both of our political parties over the past 50 to 60 years have basically said, look, if we can come up with something that we think government could do, therefore it should and will do it. And they spend a lot of their time in Congress and legislatures arguing over just the details rather than over that fundamental question of should we even have government doing this, rather than letting civic society manage these problems closer to the ground and without government oversight, control, and direction.
You also say that leading Republicans aren't able to think through educational policy. Why is that?
Well, right. This is another big problem with our political process, because if you, I have heard myself, so I have testified in more than a dozen state legislatures. I've been very active in state and national education policy for a number of years now. And I have heard leading, you know, in state and national Republican elected officials and otherwise basically affirm the idea that education is nonpartisan. And there, that couldn't be further from the truth, because when you educate a child, you're teaching that child based on some basic assumptions that you have about the world. And people have different basic assumptions about the world. And that, as it kind of leads from one thing to the other, changes your political view. So, for example, I'll give you a really what I think is an easy example. So some people, you know, think, Christians think that humans have a sin nature. There's something, you know, wrong and broken with humanity, and that basically no level of government intervention can fix. We need a divine intervention, Jesus Christ, to come and save our souls. And so people who have that kind of basic view about humanity will do education differently, and they'll do government differently. So in education, they will not expect the children to be able to lead themselves into truth. They will expect them to need guidance from older, wiser people, and, you know, from historical documents, truths from literature that our civilization has handed down. In government, they will say, well, you know, because men are evil sometimes, you know, we have that sin nature at our core, we need government to be limited because government is made out of man. This is James Madison's argument in The Federalist number 10 about why we need restrained government because of man's corrupt inner nature. We can't, you know, the person in charge of things, he himself is going to have problem wielding that power, so we can't give him too much. We have to control his use of that power. So that is a very, that's just one example of how education cannot be nonpartisan. It can't be apolitical. It can't be without a core governing philosophy. And pretending that it doesn't only feeds progressive education, which is the dominant philosophy of our education and government system.
What are your thoughts on so-called school choice?
That's a good question. I think, well, nowadays everyone is in support of school choice. You've got Democrats and Republicans. You've got mass majorities of Americans that support the idea. But then when you start to kind of break it down and say, what does, okay, that is kind of a vague term, what does it mean? You know, then you get more finely tuned. You have, you know, different increases and decreases of support about specific proposals. So I support specific policy proposals to create school choice because I do think that letting parents have control over where their kids go to school and the public funds used to provide that education for them to help them be a self-governing citizen is absolutely required for us to live in an American-style republic where people are learn to run their own lives, to run their own affairs. They have to be well-educated to do that. So to that end, I think giving the individual more control over his life is always going to provide a better system, and we don't have that right now. So there's a variety of proposals that are ways that can give that choice to parents, to communities, to kind of restore the autonomy and the self-government of families, and help feed good systems of education rather than forcing families to feed their kids and their money to a system that doesn't produce good results either for them individually or for society. But I do have, you know, some criticisms about sometimes people will take, lawmakers, bureaucrats will take public support for school choice and the very appealing idea of what I just outlined, and they will call, you know, their proposal school choice, but really it won't be. It will be, you know, they sell it to us as school choice, what we want, and then they don't deliver that to us. So for an example of that would be some school voucher programs, for example, require participating private schools to be using the same curriculum requirements and tests that the public schools use. And that kind of contradicts, you know, the point of having alternative in the first place. If parents wanted, you know, that kind of system of education that the public schools offer through those curriculum mandates and tests, then they would have their kids in public schools, right? They wouldn't be seeking to use a voucher to go to a different school. So in that case, that's kind of where school choice starts to become less choice and more about, you know, using government money to scrape in the private independent ecosystem that is offering parents different alternatives and then convert them more into what parents are exactly trying to get out of.
So there's a path there that sometimes has a sign on it that says school choice. But it leads mm-hmm. to what you basically say is just more monopoly-style public education by hooking even independent educators on government funds.
Oh, exactly. So I mean, one of the most common complaints I get about parents, for example, since you mentioned that, I've spent a lot of time reporting on Common Core, just kind of a system, a specific way of teaching kids and requirement for what they need to learn from K-12. And so I've had a lot of parents contact me and say, my private school is doing Common Core, but we went to the private school to get away from Common Core in the public schools. Why is this happening? You know, because the private schools are required to teach, you know, have their teachers trained in the same way as public school teachers are trained. They're required to use the same, you know, testing that public schools are used, and so on and so forth. So even though it's technically, you know, a different independent institution, in reality, it's just another outpost for the same kind of education that parents are looking to get out of.
So a federal voucher program would be a very bad idea, in fact, even worse than what's happening now.
That's my opinion. I mean, so I absolutely support school voucher programs, as I mentioned, but I think that the federal voucher program is the surest way to nationalize U.S. education. So we've been heading towards a European style, a socialistic style of government in America for more than a century, and my book talks about that in detail. Even though I think school choice is great, giving parents their own money back is great, the problem with doing it at the federal level as opposed to the state level, I mean, there's a number of problems. One of them is that the federal government is too far away from parents and students to be able to know, you know, what is good for them. Their local lawmakers, their state lawmakers are much more likely to listen and respond to their desires when they express them. Also, you know, we just know from, second of all, from historical experience that central planning, that centralizing power is almost inevitably going to create a special interest control program. Special interests have a very strong incentive to go after target power centers to secure them, to run them according to their own ends. You know, they're a special interest. They spend all their time and their money specifically doing that, while you and I and other parents and other citizens, we've got lots of other things going on, you know, that we're not going to be uniting as easily to combat their attempted takeover of programs. So you don't want to concentrate power. And so that obviously leads to the idea that, the last thing you want to do is concentrate power at such a great level that it's completely nationwide, that there's just, I call it one ring to rule them all, you know, so if the special interests get it, they get everything. So it's far better to localize the control, to disperse that power among individuals, among local schools, among communities, among teachers, rather than, you know, create like that Death Star, you know, once your enemy gets in there and secures and overcomes it, then you're over, you're wiped out.
Did we get an opportunity to find out in these confirmation hearings where exactly Betsy DeVos stands on this stuff?
No. And I'm really disappointed about that. I'm frustrated about that because we know a lot of good things about Betsy DeVos, but we also know some troubling things about Betsy DeVos. And it's hard for us, you know, as citizens of America to communicate to our representatives what they want them to do on our behalf, such as voting up or down on her confirmation hearing, if we don't know anything about, you know, any good, concrete, solid details about what she plans to do with her power once she's in office. So we do know some really good things. She does support school choice. She is a wealthy philanthropist. She's spent a lot of money advocating for parents to have more control over their education. But also we know some things that are concerning to me that I have liked our senators to ask more details about. So, for example, one of her main organizations that promotes school choice has really promoted a very regulated voucher programs at the state level, particularly one in Louisiana that is the most regulated one in the state and the only one to produce actually negative outcomes for the students who enrolled in it for the first time in voucher history. So we could have and should have learned a lot more about, you know, what she thought about these sort of ideas, what her interests are, and kind of, you know whether she wants to use school choice to benefit families or to further close down and control their options. But we just didn't have an opportunity to do that with her hearings, with the discussion surrounding her. Our senators instead chose not to represent us, but instead to just basically play political theater with her nomination and use it, I mean, especially on the Democrat side, but also on the Republican side. Both sides used her to raise money for themselves rather than do their job in the public service of figuring out what this lady's going to do with the power they just gave her.
There are a lot of things to be concerned about when it comes to the overreach of government and the control that the federal government has over the everyday lives of the citizens. Is there any department that has more day-to-day control over the lives of not just our citizens, but our kids than the Department of Education?
You know, it's hard to think of one. I might, for family life, certainly Health and Human Services would be a competitor for that because, of course, our medical decisions, you know, are also as intimate as our education decisions. And the Health Department of Health and Human Services also does a lot of things that are related to child rearing, to, you know, things that are kind of intimately connected with parenting as well. But it is, you know, the two definitely vie, I think, for most effect on a private family life. And another important thing to think about is that the Department of Education does not have a track record of success at benefiting children and families. So it was established in 1979 with the express goal of helping particularly poor and minority children. And there's been a number of studies. Most recently, there's a huge compilation of research by Independence Institute fellow Vicki Alger, a big book called Failure, Federal Miseducation of America's Children, where she shows in very good detail that basically the Department of Education has failed in every single one of its original stated goals and promises to the American people. So given that, it really is, there is almost no argument that I can think of that is supported by the evidence, the experience, and the research that justifies continuing to operate this, you know, $70 billion a year entity that mostly spends all of its 1,500 employees' time getting in the way of parents and teachers who are trying to help their children.
Joy Pullman is managing editor of The Federalist. She's author of a recent column titled Democrats Are Going Ape on Betsy DeVos Because If They Lose Education, They Lose Everything, and the forthcoming book, The Education Invasion. You can read her columns and find out more about her book at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Joy, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Joy was also kind enough to write the Wittenberg Trail feature in the latest Issues Etc. Journal, which is available online and is absolutely free. You can read her story about from charismatic experience to the Lutheran confession, as well as the conclusion to a series of essays I've been writing on myths regarding both the law and the gospel. It's all there in the online, absolutely free, Issues Etc. Journal. Subscribing is very easy. Just go to our website, issuesetc.org. And you'll see a red subscription button. Click that, enter your email address, and we will send you the online Issues Etc. Journal absolutely free. In hour two of Issues Etc., Michael Ware joins us. We're going to talk about his time in the Obama White House. He served as the White House's faith-based initiative director during President Obama's first term and director of faith outreach for President Obama's 2012 re-election campaign. And he's written a new book called Reclaiming Hope, Lessons Learned in the Obama White House about the future of faith in America. We'll get that inside look at faith and politics in the Obama White House right after this. Then we'll talk about the discovery of a 12th Dead Sea Scroll cave.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
Not only does our church need men right now, but the world needs men who will proclaim the gospel in its purity.
Issues Etc. regular guest, Dr. Peter Scare, Associate Professor of New Testament at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
If when you go to sleep at night you're thinking about it, my experience with it is this, is that thought won't go away. So if you're going to bed at night thinking about following our Lord and becoming a preacher of this gospel, then I would love if you could come and visit Fort Wayne, our campus. We'd love to show you around and show you what it is that we do.
Have you ever considered becoming a pastor? contact Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana at 1-800-481-2155, 800-481-2155, or visit ctsfw.edu. Christ-centered, cross-focused, Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana.
Come listen to Drs. Alvin Schmidt and Roland Elke at the 3rd Annual Concordia Apologetics Conference, Cultures in Collision, Faith and a Fractured World, this March 3rd and 4th at Concordia University, Wisconsin. You can register online at www.cuw.edu/apologetics or call 262-243-4343. That's the Concordia Apologetics Conference, March 3rd and 4th at Concordia University, Wisconsin.
If you're like me, you remember when education was about the basic skills of reading, writing, and arithmetic, and about reading great literature and history that gave our kids models of what it is to be a good person. Memoria Press's Classical Christian Curriculum is bringing this kind of education back. Get $5 off your next order by using the coupon code LPR. For more information, go to memoriapress.com. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time.
At Concordia University Irvine, you can pursue advanced theological study for academic, professional, or personal development. Concordia's Master of Arts in Theology program is grounded in the truth of Scripture and insights from the Lutheran Confessions. Courses are taught online and at intensive on-campus sessions in the summer. Apologetics, Christian education leadership, and Reformation studies are just a few of the emphases offered. For more information, visit cui.edu/theology.
Registration for the 2017-18 school year is now open at St. Paul Lutheran School in Hamel, Illinois. St. Paul is the only classical Lutheran school in Greater St. Louis. We're located 1 mile off Interstate 55. Come check out our pre-kindergarten and elementary school, where worship, historical hymnody, and catechesis are interwoven with direct academic instruction. Open house is Sunday, February 12th. Find out more at school.stpaulhamel.org.
I'm talking with regular guest Dr. Ken Sherb about a new book by one of his former professors. Which one, Ken?
The late Dr. Kurt Marquardt, and the book is The Saving Truth, Doctrine for Lay People.
You edited this book.
Yeah, the unpublished manuscript was among Marquardt's papers, and it is vintage Marquardt, lively, engaging, centering in the Christ who saves, with an apologetics chapter at the end.
You can find out more about Saving Truth, Doctrine for Lay People at lutheracademy.com.
O Lord, open my lips.
Listen to chapel services live, weekday mornings from Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
Make haste, O God, to deliver me.
Morning Chapel from Kramer Chapel. Live weekday mornings at 9 Central, 10 Eastern, 8 Mountain, and 7 Pacific at issuesetc.org.